So we're continuing this week in a series that we're doing together called Game Carriers. Most of you, I think, have the general sense that I'm a little bit newer, right? This is the third week together. Me as pastor. It's been going good. And it's also been especially good to have an opportunity for me to get to know a little bit more about all of you and your community with people sharing the pulpit with me and getting some stories of how God has moved in the life of the church and in your personal lives. And it's really beautiful to know all the ways that God is moving in all of our different settings and circumstances, and how through those, then we can become even more of a new body together because God's moving in each separate thing and drawing it into something new. And as you probably heard, this week's themes are especially about that. And so, we're going to go a little bit more into the scriptures. I know these were also scriptures. The Ephesians one, I kind of know, I had studied before some of the passages around it, preached on some of them, so the themes were similar. But the Gibeonites one, I could not remember or have not done at all. So we'll look a little bit more into what all is going on there. Hopefully that some of this is new for you too. It's nice to get to know some new things about God as we're getting to know new things about each other as well. So, this morning, with this thought of all the different ways that God draws people together from different backgrounds, different experiences, different preferences, different perspectives, Becky Paul shared with me some of the things that had happened in her life and her family that are really illustrative of how God does this in big ways and in small ways. And I think that that's a beautiful thing to be able to hear. And I want us to be especially mindful of how all of these things that we can read about in Scripture, whether they're familiar or unfamiliar stories, do in fact have ways of playing out in our own lives. That all the things that we saw God doing before, God is continuing to do all the time, that we can keep an eye out for that and be thankful and appreciative and excited about continuing to see in our lives as well. And this is a great opportunity to do that. So Becky is actually going to get us rolling.
Good morning. Thank you, Pastor Rob. My entire life, all I wanted to do was be a mom. However, as I found out the hard way, God had a specific plan for me. Back in 1984, I suffered two miscarriages, one in May and one in November. I was heartbroken. Life felt very unfair. Needless to say, my faith was being tested. It continued to be tested when 5 long years went by, and I couldn't conceive. We pretty much gave up that route, and we started discussing adoption. Mark and I were both very open to that, so the search began. I mailed hundreds of letters to physicians and attorneys and made probably just as many phone calls, and one of those calls made all the difference in my world. I called one of the hospital social workers at OSU Medical Center where I worked. I asked, by chance, if birth mothers ever came in and surrendered their babies after birth. She said yes, but there's always an adoptive family waiting in the wings. She did, however, ask me about the option of a foreign adoption. I was completely open to that concept, although I admitted that I didn't know anything about it or even how to begin. She set me up with a nurse in kidney transplant, which is where I retired from, by the way, who had adopted her son from Brazil. I was ecstatic. She was having an informational meeting at her house that Saturday night. So Mark and I went, and from that moment on, we knew that someday we would bring home our beautiful child from Brazil. That was in January 1989. So I began doing all the paperwork that was needed. We had to have a home study so they could evaluate if we in our home were acceptable to bringing a child into it. I went downtown and had to obtain more different forms and signatures than I ever have or ever will to this day. However, we finally got everything done, and another couple from Central Ohio took our papers with them when they went to get their little boy. That was in March 1989. So the wait began. It was so exciting, but yet so uncertain. However, we had faith that this was what God was working on in our lives. The love and support we received from our family, friends, and this church family was beyond compare. Unfortunately, in June 1989, we received word that Brazil had stopped all adoptions to the United States. Needless to say, my world was crushed. I cried and I cried, and I'll admit, I asked God why he would allow this to happen. I had tried so hard and had done everything I was supposed to do. I loved this child so much already, and now I was never going to hold him or her. However, deep in my heart, I never gave up hope. It was a horribly long 2 months, but then adoptions reopened in August. Praise the Lord. Then, on September 18th, during the Monday night football game, the phone rang. It was Lenny, who had served as our translator throughout the process. She said, "Hi, Becky, it's Lenny." And the phone went dead. I couldn't believe it. But in a couple minutes, it rang again. "Hi, Becky, it's Lenny, and you have a..." And the phone went dead. I remember yelling things that I would never repeat in church and practically jumping up and down with a combination of anger and excitement. I thought, this is it. So the phone rang a third time, and she said clear very quickly, "Congratulations, you have a son. He was born on September 16th. Well, yes, I was hysterical. God had answered my prayers. So we began packing in anticipation of getting our date to travel down to Fort Eliza to pick him up. I wish I could say that process went smoothly, but I would be lying. There was still a lot of problems with the adoption process. What we thought had been worked out wasn't. The Brazilians were not happy with the Americans adopting their children. So it should have been a 1 to 2 week process of finalization so we could leave became 8 long weeks. We finally decided that we were just going to go down there and fight for our son. We made our plane reservations for December 6th, and that was that. Well, then, while watching the OSU Michigan game that last Saturday in November, we got a call. My dad had suffered a massive stroke. He survived, but his condition was critical. He was scheduled for surgery on December 4th, 2 days before we were due to leave. Oh my gosh, what was I going to do? The night before the surgery, the surgeon told us that there was at least a 50% chance that my dad would not survive his surgery. But he did, and 2 days after that, we went to the hospital on our way to the airport, and basically all he could say was, "Bring my grandson home." So we boarded the plane and off we went. We were required to stay a month down there, which was very hard, but also wonderful. We spent Christmas and New Year's there and learned all about that culture, and we arrived back on January 3rd, 1990. I'll never forget the look on my dad's face as everyone met us at the gate, which you could do back then at the airport. He was wearing a yellow sweater, and he was crying and reaching out for his grandson. The scriptures Pastor Rob has for us today, I believe, do tie in with what we went through as a family and how the church played such an important role in that. As it reads in Ephesians 9:19-21, "Consequently, you are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people, and also members of his household built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the chief cornerstone. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. I truly know in my heart that my family was built by Christ, as we were fortunate enough to adopt another daughter, and then, since God has a sense of humor, I gave birth to our second daughter at the young age of 41, and that this was his ultimate plan. He brought us all together as one and allowed us to be blessed with this church family. May we all continue to love and nourish each other as a church family and continue in getting to know you. Now my beautiful baby boy is 30 years old, and I couldn't be more proud of the man he has turned out to be. Every single day, I'm so thankful to God that he brought us together as a family. I love you." Thank you.
Really is beautiful. beautiful to be able to hear how God is moving in your lives. So that to have Matthew and your family with us is great to see you. It is really amazing all of the ways, despite the adventure of obstacles and geography and incorporating different cultures and other things that are going on in our lives that feel like they're not in line with what we want to focus on, that God's Spirit really does prioritize and persist in drawing us together into exactly these types of things. And whether it starts from an immediate nuclear family, or it extends to how God brings together lots of different types of people for a church family, or even how God brings together broader communities and people groups as families through Him. This is something that God seems to prioritize. Again, no matter how crazy the story, how big the barriers seem to be, how much we have to go through together with God to get to that final unification. The stories that we've heard today, maybe you got a chance to kind of peek around the Gibeonites a little bit or not. Maybe you know a little bit about the context of the Ephesian church or not. But they had their own versions of all of this craziness. The Gibeonites were people that lived in Canaan when Israel was coming out of Egypt and going into the Promised Land. They'd seen that Israel was conquering other cities that wanted to fight and kill the Israelites, and they were coming in and settling. And they said, we got to go and try to make peace with the Israelites, but they seem to want to fight with anybody that's in the general Canaan area. So maybe if we pretend that we're from, like, far away, but we want to be allies once they get settled, then they'll swear an oath to us and be okay. And so they pretended, even though they were basically, like, just down the street, to dress up in clothes that were really worn and tattered, and they got their oldest, tiredest-looking donkeys and animals to, like, walk over to the Israelites with them and be like, we came, we heard you're here, we want to, work with you, please take pity on us. And so the Israelites made essentially a treaty with them about it. But then found out, wait a minute, you guys fooled us. And so in this story right here, it seems like the Israelites are saying, well, we're going to curse you because we're going to make you our woodcutters and our water carriers for our community. It seems like they're serving, but also for the altar of God. So I think God was working to bring in these people that did not have an encounter with God as a people group yet, to have this actual close proximity, ability to serve and connect with God, that eventually made the Gibeonites fully integrated into the Israelite society. As we see through the rest of the Old Testament, Gibeonites became prophets later in the Old Testament. Gibeonites were leaders with Nehemiah and Ezra when the Jewish people came back from exile and were rebuilding the temple. And Gibeon, before that, was one of the key places that the tabernacle stayed before the first temple was even built. That even when some trickery was involved, some resentment was involved, God was working together to bring people into a new family and a new society that would not have expected it, but that something new, beautiful could come of it. Ephesus, the city that received the letter that we read today, was one of the places that had the most blending of Gentiles and Jewish exiles, essentially, in the first century, in the Roman world. They were having a lot of tension. The whole letter that Paul writes here is almost all about, I know you guys are having a lot of trouble getting along, but there's something really beautiful that God can bring together if you look for it. You stop fighting over little differences here and there. And on top of that, at the time that Paul was writing the letter, it was probably even harder for these Jews and Gentiles in Ephesus to try to become a new community of Christians. Because there were stories that Jews and Syrians in Palestine were basically having race riots with each other at the same time. And so any place where Jews and Gentiles were interacting throughout the rest of the world would have had a lot of tension and frustration and potential misunderstanding as well. And Paul was writing from prison at the time because he had been accused of taking a Gentile fellow Christian who was following God too far into the temple. And so the Jews had arrested him and said, you can't do that. You can't say that these people can be brought together. And so all of this was hanging over as an issue and a problem that had to be overcome, or maybe had to be taken as a sign that none of this was meant to be done. This community that Paul was writing to. And yet, Paul felt that God was continually telling them, don't give up, no matter the barrier, no matter the frustration, that what God is offering us, the beautiful new life that comes in Jesus, implicitly has all of these new bonds, all of these new types of people being brought together by God's Spirit. And so, as people who are trying to also follow God, create a community animated by God with us, I have tried to always be mindful of some of these types of things, and an experience that for me was really formative was actually my first job out of seminary. I went to work at a church called Garden Grove United Methodist Church, and it was very unique in that they said they were one church, but they had three congregations, and each congregation spoke a different language. So there's the Anglo-English-speaking congregation, there's a Korean-speaking congregation, and there's a Samoan-speaking congregation. Along with that, the city of Garden Grove had, when it was first built out of orange fields, been primarily Anglo people, but then over time had been populated ultimately more by Hispanic people and immigrants from Mexico and Central America, and also refugees from Vietnam. Garden Grove actually has the largest population in a single jurisdiction of Vietnamese people outside of Vietnam in the entire world, because a lot of people were resettled there during the Vietnam War. And so there were all these different languages and cultures that were having to figure out how to connect together in this ministry context. And I was mainly working with the Anglo congregation, but I was appointed as one of my responsibilities to work with the Intercongregational Committee, which I was excited about. That's where everyone came together and kind of talked about how do we exist together as a community. Unfortunately, or maybe just because this is how stuff goes, everyone's kind of figuring out how to keep their own things going. That committee was often just sort of meeting together real quick to check off some practical stuff about, do we have our calendar straight? Is the building usage okay? Do we need to change how we mix together finances? Does anybody need to put more in or whatever else? And there were a little bit of underlying tensions as well. The Anglo Church was the one that was first there and had sort of most ownership of the building. The Korean church, though, was growing while the Anglo church was declining and getting older, and they had a lot of youth. And the Samoan church, you know, there's a decent but smaller Samoan population in Southern California. They kind of felt like, we know who we are, and we don't have to get mixed up in all the rest of this. But there could often be a push and pull about, you know, who's really getting to make decisions or what opportunities are opened up or not. And so sometimes they were tense meetings. Sometimes they, you know, were practical but not super rich and full of ministry together. But one of the things that I was tasked with helping facilitate was to help do some intercongregational worship services for Pentecost, when we celebrate the Spirit coming and helping Jews from lots of different languages and areas of around the Mediterranean being able to understand each other and come to understand Christ. And also World Communion Sunday, which again, we celebrate the connection that we have all across geography. And previously, the way that had normally gone is the Anglo congregation would create a liturgy, and then there would be people from the Samoan and the Korean congregations that would translate certain parts of it. But essentially, it was all in English, and it was kind of facilitated by the Anglo congregation. But we decided that this was a chance to maybe act out more partnership, more equanimity with each other. And so we planned the service completely with leaders from each congregation, and we had started using a projector and some screens, and so what we decided is that each section would have a particular language that it was read or given in, but that the languages that weren't spoken would be put on the screen in translation, so people could listen and read at the same time, feel like one language was primary and the rest were kind of just tagging along. And then people from each congregation selected art that was native to their culture that fit with the themes that we could visualize some of the things that we were celebrating and connecting with God about together. And that did prove to have this new ability to relate because we've partnered together, because we've seen how things can weave together and not just be about sort of one thing with appendages. But even more than that, there were things that happened in the life of the church that year that bonded us together in ways that we had taken for granted and not really followed up on before. The first thing was that the Anglo pastor was diagnosed with brain cancer and was out of ministry for a number of months during that year. And all of the people like me, assistant associate pastors of the Anglo congregation, but also the pastors of the Korean congregation, the Samoan congregation, all made themselves actively available to each other and to the congregations to support the things that needed to get done, the processing and mourning and worrying that people were doing, the ability to maybe take people, because the Anglo congregation had a lot of older folks, and so Korean members and Samoan members were driving Anglo members to go and visit Pastor Bob in the hospital or at his home. And so all these new bonds were formed. There's also the year that the Great Recession started, and so we suddenly had tons of people from the community coming to the church and asking for help all the time that we'd never really encountered a lot before. And again, especially because of the cross-cultural necessity of who was in the community and how we could connect with them well, understand things well or not, we all had to rally together. And so again, Samoan members and leaders, Korean members and leaders, Anglo members and leaders, all rallied together to figure out what resources do we have to pool? Who can fix, if we can't pay for something that somebody asks, who can help fix something in their house instead? And maybe the Anglo members couldn't, but the Samoan or Korean members could. And again, tension, worry at the base of all of these different events. And yet, God was making sure to use it to bring us together as a new type of community that we weren't before. And it was really beautiful, and I even experienced it as a gift specifically. The Korean congregation gave me a chance to work really closely with their youth group and college group. And so they had me actually be the every week leader of that worship service that that group had, and gave me a peek into how they were creating interesting ways of the tension that they had, especially as an immigrant community of generations, like a generation that immigrated, the generation that was born here, that was almost its own two separate cultures, even within that culture, and what they were doing to try to stay together and to pass things along that I would never have seen or understood if they didn't invite me to be a part of that and didn't show me things that they were trying to do. And the Samoan congregation would do these amazing, but very different worship services that were much more like physical. This one, they had planned dances that weren't kind of like what we sometimes do with Sunday school with motions, but were much more kind of coordinated ahead of time, but that the whole congregation would do, rather than mimicking things that we kind of know they would help you come along with. And if any of you, sometimes people are more familiar with Samoan culture with like a haka dance, the warrior dance that they would do that sometimes they still do in sports, and so you see it at the Olympics or in rugby or things like that. So they didn't do dances like that, but they sometimes do those same things that were very like thinking of how God is really working in our bodies. And I was used to intellectual spirituality, emotional spirituality, sentimental spirituality, more from my experience, but this visceral spirituality that the Samoan congregation had gave me a sense of understanding how God works really in our space and even in our bodies in a way that I had never experienced before. I don't get a lot of outlets for now, but that has still been really formative. And our community is not going to look exactly like that community. Our circumstances are not going to be the same as nations like Israel and Gibeon coming together. Not going to be the same as an immediate family being brought together by God's Spirit. But we are a family, and God is equally invested in all of these things. And so we want to find ways to open ourselves up, both to what God is already doing, But then those of us who are already a part of the family to continue to draw us out and make the connections between us deeper and more meaningful. But also how we might expand the family. Not only in size, but in character and kind. And I don't have exact pictures or expectations of like, this is exactly what it's going to look like, and these are the exact people that God's going to bring to us, or that God's going to give us a chance to cross paths with. But I do think it's something that God really legitimately offers as part of eternal life lived now. A transcendent life more than what we're used to, more than we come to on our own, is that ability to touch something of God that's beyond us by sharing not only our own glimpse of what that can be, but seeing what someone else's glimpse of that can be from their perspective, from their experience. And there are things that I do see in our scriptures and in the story that Becky told about what God did in her family that I think we can take encouragement from. There will often be a starting context of separation or division or worry about what actually allows people to be fully included in our family. But God will always be working, as we see in this, whether we can always see the path on our own or not, to create unity where everyone is valued exactly as they are. And God will call us to go beyond what we're used to in some way, I think. And we might have to be ready to stretch ourselves a little bit, which can sound intimidating, but can also be really beautiful. We didn't stretch ourselves, but we have amazing stories of adoptions. Even in biological families, stretching yourself a little bit to get to know your in-laws, no matter what. Or even growing up and going from being a child relating to your parents to being an adult relating with your parents. Or being a parent relating to your child when they're a minor and then when they're an adult. And maybe they're having kids of their own. Those are only ways that we have to stretch what we know that our relationships can be. And God did that with the Gibeonites and the Israelites, with the Gentiles and the Jews, and gave something beautiful. And I do believe that our lives do become richer and full of more potential when we let God stretch us and expand our family. Again, the Gibeonites became fully participative in the nation of Israel. A new community called Christians came from two people groups that were distinct and at odds with each other, in Jews and Gentiles. Paul in particular, again, like I said, seems to assume that if we're going to have a life with God who is beyond us and beyond our full comprehension, that one of the best and richest ways to do that is to share connection with God with people who also stretch us a little bit and are a little bit beyond their comprehension. And so, I'm not sure exactly, maybe some of us could be like Becky, thinking of times in our lives and relationships in our lives where we have been stretched, where God has opened up new possibilities because of that. Some of us, maybe this idea of that being how God draws together communities from different experiences, different backgrounds, feels a little bit intimidating. And again, I'm not saying this or giving us an opportunity to engage with these stories as a way of setting expectations that there's a ton of pressure to live up to, or as a way of trying to boss people around. Maybe it's a way to make things a little bit easier on me because I'm new, right? So maybe I'm you have to get used to me a little bit. No, what it's really about is giving all of us encouragement of what God is holding out for us to take hold of and to be a part of. I want us to be encouraged and excited that God wants to offer us an amazing, beautiful life together with each other, and that can also be beautiful and amazing for people that we run into. And it becomes more beautiful and amazing when we have those interactions together. This is not just about sustaining our organization. This is not just about a checklist. This is about a deeper connection with God and a fuller experience of life. As Becky's family showed us, as our stories today showed us, these type of separation bridging Difference uniting and personally stretching relationships are what it means to be formed and met by God. And so I hope that today we can open our hearts and our eyes to recognize where we might find people who are looking for a family. That we might be able to see even where people are sneaking in weird ways to be a part of our lives, that maybe we don't even want to open the door right away, but God might be giving us something to share with them more than we anticipate, like the Goodly Mason and the Israelites. And where we can even allow ourselves to be stretched into new and beautiful experiences of what family can be. And so in that spirit, we're going to move together to a family dinner at God's table for communion with God and with each other and with God's family across time and space.